Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Hey there, bestie. I'm Lori Ami, your What to Read Next podcast host. Join me as we dive into exciting new reads that'll have you reaching for your TBR pile in no time. From gripping mysteries to spicy romances, we'll explore it all and help you find your next favorite book. So grab a cup of tea, cozy it up, and let's discover some amazing reads together. Hi, Yulene. Welcome to What's Your Next podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So happy to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a screenwriter and director. I'm currently adapting Emily Henry's People You Need on Vacation and Beach Read for the screen. And I also have my own debut novel, How to End a Love Story, coming out on April 9th.
So we got to talk about, because your book actually deals with some of the screenwriting process and adapting books. So that's part of the book. But we got to talk about first your job at Hollywood. How did you land that job? How did you get into this world?
Yeah, how did I get into this world? I think it began when I was like 11 years old and watching them announce the Harry Potter movies being adapted and like kind of like chewing on my nails like, oh, my God, are they going to destroy my childhood? And I think around then was when I was like, I think I'm going to try and claw my way into a position of power and influence over all of the future books that I love. And I used to write a lot of fan fiction. And I remember when I was like 15, I made this deal with myself that like if I could get my one fic on like the top 10 list for that couple for the year, then I would have a future for myself as a professional writer. And then I did, and I do. So shout out to my 15-year-old self. And in college, I studied creative writing and international relations and politics. I thought briefly that I wanted to go into journalism. It turned out I just wanted to watch The West Wing more. And then I started writing all these screenplays and kind of handing them off to other people to direct. And then they kept fucking it up. So I was like, I'm going to do it. So then I kind of fell in love with directing that way. I moved out to LA to do the NBC Page program, which is one of those kind of entry level jobs where you're like giving tours on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And I was on assignment with like NBC talent relations and worked the SAG Awards, I remember. Also, I worked on the set of The Office for their very last day of filming, which was like a very cool thing. And I fucked up a delivery there. And I remember like, oh, my God. So that was kind of like my way into this industry. And I wasn't very good at my job. Like you're supposed to leave the Page program and get a job by being hired into one of these departments. And I was kind of like antisocial and would like sit in my car at lunch and eat by myself because I just wanted to be alone. So I did not thrive in that environment. And I was making all these short films on the weekends and sending them off to film festivals, where the median age was probably about like 65. And everything I was doing was like kind of a coming of age thing about like a girl who's dealing with her insecurities about her chest size. And so I was like, this is not exactly my target demo. And somebody said, you should try going to VidCon, which is this convention for online video. I go there, the sea of screaming teenage fangirls. And I was like, oh my God, my people are here. And so I started two YouTube channels, and I did one where it was a series called Kissing in the Rain, where it was like actors who kept finding themselves kissing in the rain. And I would use each of these webisodes to kind of explore a mini adaptation of something I had loved. So I did like an Anne of Green Gables episode. There was one that I think was like Lillian James from my Harry Potter fan fiction. There was also something from I Capture the Castle, I think. So that was kind of like me getting into the adaptation game early on. And then from that, I went like Tumblr viral because there was this transmedia component because it was like 2014. Because of that, Ron Howard and Brian Grazer's company kind of noticed me and they were like, do you want to do this short film incubator? We'll give you you know, $10,000 to make a short film. So I did a short film that was about Wizard Rock. It was called I Ship It. And it was about a girl who like uses a Wizard Rock Battle of the Bands to get back at her ex-boyfriend. And so we sold that to the CW and did a web series that won a Streamy Award. And then they were like, do you want to do this as a TV show? Did it as a TV show, premiered to the second lowest ratings that the CW has ever seen, promptly canceled. But it's okay. I'm in the WGA now. And at this point, I'm allowed to like pitch on other kind of, we call them open writing assignments. Like the studios have these open writing assignments where they're like, we're looking for a writer on this. And then the agencies go and send their people there. So I think the year is like 2018 and Crazy Rich Asians has come out. And so they're like, we're looking for our Chinese restaurant movie project. And I was like, I will pitch on your Chinese restaurant movie project. And I took them so many iterations because I think like I would bring them a version and they would be like, you know, that's not quite right. But like, what if you change this? And I found out later they were meeting with like way more senior writers than me. But I think those writers were not as desperate as me. So when those people were told like, not this version, could you like adjust it and do something else? They were like, no, I'm going to go get another job. Whereas I was like, it's between this and Postmate, baby. So I just kept pitching them stuff until finally they said yes to me. So that was my first like studio feature sale. And then I think around then I had like met with my reps and I was feeling a little bit like stuck because things weren't moving. There's a lot of waiting in our business. And they were like, well, you should find something you want to adapt. So I remember going to the library and looking to look for a book to adapt. And across like the way, I saw a spine of a book that said, I believe in a thing called love. And I was like, oh my God, I do believe in a thing called love. So I pick it out. It's by Maureen Gu. And it's this delightful YA about a girl who's obsessed with Korean dramas and uses the laws of the K-drama to get a boyfriend. So I was like, I would like to adapt this. And like by pure fucking luck, Maureen had just moved to my agency at UTA. And so my agents were like, well, this actually works out great. Let's do this package. And they were like, we're going to take it out and we're going to see if there's any appetite for this in the marketplace. And then they come back to me and they're like, there's no appetite for this in the marketplace. But are you happy to adapt it on spec, which means for no money? And I was like, sure. Yes. So I adapted on spec for no money. And then we take it out and then we do sell it to Netflix. And then at that point in time, I think I've sold a couple like pilots because I'm also like developing TV pilots in the background. So I think at that point I had sold like two pilots. And then development cycles pass, years pass, I age. And then I get sent a for your consideration email with the manuscript for People We Meet on Vacation. And I read it and I was like, oh my God, this has more locations than a James Bond movie. And it also treats romance as it, in my opinion, should be, which is serious. Yeah. I think as much as we talk about rom-coms in Hollywood, I think that can be a very flattening moniker for the genre that brings me so much joy, because I think there's so much more than just comedy to a truly good romance that ends happily. And I think Emily Henry is somebody who really understands that. And that was something I resonated with her work like pretty much right away. And so I got on board on People We Meet on Vacation. We sold that to Sony 3000 Pictures with Temple Hill as the producer. And then that fall, I think I started drafting my own novel because I had this moment where I was like, I feel so, so lucky. I recognize that like I am living the dream essentially that I created for myself when I was 11 years old. And then I was like, and yet... And I'm like, this is kind of similar to the plot beats of People We Meet on Vacation, because Poppy has this moment where she's like, I got everything I wanted and I'm not. And so I had this moment where it was like, did I get into this just to do adaptation or do I have anything original left within me? And that was when I decided to draft my own novel, which I was never actually going to show anybody in case it turned out to be bad. But I knew I wanted to set it in a world that required zero research for me. I pretty much reached as far as like 2 inches to the right and said, okay, it's about adaptation in a writer's room in television rather than features. And yeah, that's kind of how we got here.
All right. I am fascinated. I love this journey. I love the zigzagging, the places where you're going and all the different push and pull and all the different no's you receive at the same time the yeses you received and following that path. When did you sleep? Did you get any sleep during this time or...
I feel like I was in a chrysalis stage for all of my 20s. Like, I was sleeping. I was for sure sleeping. Not a lot during the drafting of my novel, to be honest, because I was pretty much writing from like 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. And then I would switch over to people we meet on vacation from 10 to 5 p.m. And then from 5 p.m. to midnight, I would pick up back up on my novel. And that was like a fugue state. But I did sleep, but I didn't. I look back on that time and I'm always like, I don't think I could have gotten here any faster. Like, I don't think that I could have worked harder in terms of what my energy and emotional and psychological limits were. Yeah. I think I pretty much pushed myself as hard as I could. So I'm always like, all right, that's, you know, that's good to know.
Yeah. I love, you know, it's part of the process. I think like, especially the 20s, you spend so much time hustling and trying to figure out who you're set yourself in the world. And doing so much of the groundwork and doing so much of proving yourself to others and trying and also failing and experimenting and trying different things. And I would say like my 30s were like that. I, you know, most of my 30s, I think I'm now in my 40s and now I'm mostly settled down. But to get to that place, it's a lot of zigzagging, a lot of trying different things, failing a lot of things, trying something else, following that crumb of like something I like, maybe this is something it's respected, and then trying to figure out, you know, your sense in the world, especially in Hollywood, that's such a like a cutthroat environment. I can imagine it's just, you know, trying to stay true to yourself was part of the journey.
Yeah, I think it's like there is a lot of luck and privilege, obviously, I think involved. Like, I think I won a lot of like lotteries by birth. But yeah. I'm also like, I don't think I tripped and got here. I very much set my eyes on a target and I was like, I will do everything that is within my power to try and get there. And so having that as kind of the compass of knowing where I wanted to end up was always very helpful.
Yeah, I think it's earned me out the outcome and understand, like, you set the intention and like, you don't know how it's going to work out, but you have trust that it has worked out in the past and it's certainly going to work out in the future. However that's going to look like is that's a journey. That's a part that you got to enjoy or dredge or everything in between. So let's talk about How to End a Love Story. You mentioned that it's a writer's room. It's an adaptation from a TV series. It's a teen TV series. So I see like all the parallels and the different nuggets from your life that can made it through. But how did you come up with the story? The conflict is so central and there's no way to overcome the conflict. At least from the first part of the book, you're like, how this is going to work. What made you decide to create that bigger stake and unravel it for that process?
Should we say what the stake is?
We can say, I think it's the first chapter. The stake is a prologue. So.
Right. Yeah. So for context, I guess minor spoilers for the first two pages. The way that the hero and the heroine are connected is that they go to high school together. She's like kind of the editor-in-chief of the school paper. He's the homecoming king. And then one night, her younger sister decides to walk into traffic to end her life. And Grant is driving the car that hits her. And so the book opens at her little sister's funeral. And the hero walks into this room that he is not wanted in. And they quickly throw him out. And then the next time they see each other is 13 years later. So in terms of why... That actually came quite late. I knew I wanted to set it in the world of adaptation. I knew I wanted it to be people who knew each other in high school and were seeing each other again for the first time. But I think I had all the trappings of something that felt like this kind of a lighter rom-com. And I could feel that I was like, I wanted to explore something a little bit closer to the things that first excited me, I think, when I got into storytelling. Like, when I was like trawling fanfiction.net back in the day, I was always drawn to kind of angstier like material. I liked when things were kind of dramatic and grounded and ended up in a place that was more hopeful. Like, I liked being taken on that journey. And I think because I do so much genre work in Hollywood, a lot of the times there's there's less room for that a little bit. I think it would be hard for me to have pitched this story as a movie. And so I kind of came up with it about like a day before I started drafting, maybe 48 hours, somewhere in the 36 hour range. I think I remember walking into the kitchen and turning to my husband and being like, if I also connected them in this way. And he was like, that's sticky. That could be compelling. And so I definitely kind of brought that in very late in the game, but it opened up a lot more room on things that I wanted to explore narratively.
Yeah, I think like it just, it's a rom-com, but it has the angst of a romance that I love. It's the sense of like, will they, won't they, how is this going to work? Because I know romance has rules, and romance, it's going to be happily ever after, love story is the central point, and everything else, there's going to be overcome, there's going to be breakups, there's going to be things, there's going to be obstacles. That's what the author does. And the stakes were so high that I was like, I need to read the last page to understand that everything's going to be okay. But this was not going to take my surprise. And sometimes that's what it comes down to. But it has this sense of like, it has the makings of a rom-com, but it also has the depth of an angsty novel. Like one of those angsty novels, you're like, you just want to throw the book and go for a while and then come back to it. And you're like, okay, I need to read this again. And you should just hold on to this because this is a journey that I'm here for. I'm here for the characters to come together, to deny their feelings because they're not supposed to. And then same time, bring it back together. It's kind of like, It made me feel like Romeo and Juliet adaptation from 1996 with Leo and Claire Danes. You know, they're not supposed to be together. But you know,
it's
that same feeling of angst that you're like, you were not supposed to, but they can. They're meant to be.
Yeah, I love a factor that feels like we mustn't. I think, you know, I grew up in a very repressed child, very repressed childhood home, I would say, where I wasn't really allowed to date. And so I think that has probably carried over into my like adult id, where I'm just like, I love anything that's like, they can't,
but they must.
They can't possibly. We mustn't. It's bad.
Yes. And I'm glad that you didn't skim on the spiciness. So there was spiciness galore.
There is spice. This is an open door romance for sure.
Yeah. Yes, it has all the makings of a hit that we want to keep, you know, telling people, like putting up their people's name, like you must read this now.
I feel like there's always a good spicy book that you want to be able to like peddle out to people.
Yeah.
Like, I hope this awakens something in you.
Yes. Yes, please. So let's share some book recommendations. What kind of books do you tend to read? I know you mentioned a little bit rom-coms and romance, but any other genre that you go to that's just kind of like a good escape for you?
I primarily read historical romance and celebrity memoirs. Those are like my two go-to genres when I'm reading for pleasure. And so of the historicals, I mean, the historical that got me into romance novels, the very first one I read was Halfway to Heaven by Susan Wiggs in seventh grade. But that it was too adult for me. I was not ready. And so I did not, I remembered it. It was like blazoned in my brain. But then I did not return to the genre until 2016, when I was suddenly like in need of escapism. And I found Private Arrangements by Sherry Thomas. And that was kind of the book that led me down the rabbit hole of romance novels. And I found from her like Courtney Milan, and it was like the Brother Sinister series there. And then from there, I found Sarah McLean and all like the I read through her like entire back catalog. And then that led me to like Lisa Kleypas and Joanna Bourne and all these like Tessa Dare. And then I think Tessa Bailey, just because I was like, as long as I'm on the Tessas, which led me back to contemporaries a little bit. And I was like, I really like contemporaries, but I love historicals. So yeah, those are kind of, that's kind of where I live. That's my happy spot. And then in terms of celebrity book memoirs, Alan Rickman's published diaries are fascinating to me. They're called Madly Deeply, and it covers like the span of quite a few decades. And I like reading about like the filming of all the Harry Potter movies, where he's like, you know, Dame something, I think, was it Maggie Smith? She like leans over and she's like, what expression did you choose today? as they're filming a scene at the Great Hall. And I thought that was really funny. So yeah, that's kind of what I read.
I love this. Yeah, I'm just learning about more. Just something to be said about, like, just understand the lives of the true lives of the Hollywood people. Like, it's, they're just like us. It's just like the Us Weekly says. They're just like us. They have the same issues than us, you know, only a limited with fame.
It's fun to see what they're willing to say on the record.
Yeah. So, Yulin, tell us where you can find you online.
You can find me primarily on Instagram at yulin.kwang, YULIN.KUANG. There is a Yulin Kwang on Instagram who is not me. That is my cousin, because she has the same name. It's different Chinese characters, but the anglicization is still Yulin Kwang, but I am the verified one. So, ha.
There we go. Thank you, Yulin, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the What to Read Next podcast. If you enjoy our bookish conversations and want more recommendations, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Also, head on over to the What to Read Next blog for a list of books mentioned in today's show. Happy reading! Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you once for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.